D4. Number 8B.
And as it begins to govern us through mind, spirit, soul, naturally it lifts our life right above the mortal concept. It gives a sense of life, of exaltation, that we feel, oh, I have started on a new life. I have started on a fresh life. I feel just like having wings now. It's the exaltation of life that you begin to feel. You can't help feeling it, you see, because a new principle is working within you now. And that principle lifts us right above the mortal. And we experience it as winged with new vision. And as it gives us that new sense and fresh sense of life, we get the sense of truth, of dominion. Now one has a sense, that as in the sixth day, that man has dominion over his affairs. That now one has got that form of truth, that healthy form of truth, which brings forth only the right thing. And so you rest in peace, in love, and say, golly, finally I found it. It's okay now. Now I feel at rest and I feel at peace, just as the seventh day showed it, that God rested on the seventh day. One feels one has attained the goal. And you see that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love translates itself to the human and manifests itself in the human as a human process, nearly. As a time process, as a process of development, because that's the way we experience it. I wanted to show you how this word order is really made clear. You see, what I want to show here is that really the days of creation, as given on the beginning of the Bible, shows the law of creativity, the divine law of creativity. It gives it in biblical symbols, and we can translate the biblical symbols into metaphysical ideas. But when we have done that, then afterwards we can translate them into synonymous terms. That's, I think, the great process which we have to learn in our studies, to take the Bible, first interpret the Bible into metaphysical expressions, and from there bring it right back into the synonymous terms. Why? Because biblical symbols are very limited, because they are not abstract symbols. And therefore, they are very, very limited. The moment we can translate natural symbols out of themselves into abstract ideas, then the symbols rise higher, they become more exact, they become more definite, but they are still limited because we only exchange, really, one symbol for one idea. But an idea is always an idea of its synonymous term, an idea of God. And so we can translate it right back to the super symbol of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. You see, that's the method we should use, which gives us really that divine system of reference. If we have first in the biblical symbol the first day, which said, let there be light, the metaphysician comes and says, well, this light is not a solar light, but is a symbol for an abstract idea, namely for intelligence, for instance, or wisdom. And the scientist comes and says, but intelligence and wisdom are only ideas of the synonymous term mind. Intelligence cannot exist per se. It is only an idea expressing, one of the many ideas expressing the characteristics of mind. And in this way we can translate back the whole symbolism of the Bible into terminology of the synonymous term. The second day of creation is the firmament. Let there be a firmament which divides the water. If we can translate this, this firmament into metaphysical idea, we have order or purity which divides, where the false and the wrong are divided, and there is put order into the whole chaos. But order and purity are only ideas expressing the synonymous term spirit. See? And so in the third day we have let there be the dry land and let there be seed within itself, showing in a natural symbol of the plants and the seeds what really metaphysically can be expressed as unchangeless identity, or identities which remain changeless, where an identity remains what it is, never changes itself, which is nothing else but an expression of the synonymous term soul. Or we have the fourth day where the creation said, let there be the sun and the moon and the star, giving a symbol of divine government, divine system, of the supreme system. That's the metaphysical interpretation, but the science of it is that there is a principle, or there wouldn't be a system nor government. Without principle, there is no system. The fifth day is where they said, let there be living creatures and fowls that fly above the earth, gives a wonderful sense metaphysically of life, of movement, of exaltation, which is nothing else but an expression of life, the synonymous term life, you see. The sixth day is the day of man. Let us make man, which has dominion. Well, man is only a symbol, is only a mythological symbol for something else. Metaphysically, we have to do with consciousness, with health or wholeness or the computation of ideas. That's really what is the absolute fact about this symbolization of man. But that cannot exist without the fact in being that there is truth. Without truth, there is no health, there is no consciousness. And then the seventh day is the day where God ended his creation and rested. There was rest and peace. You can translate it in a sense of fulfillment, of perfection. But that, again, are only ideas symbolizing in a specific way the synonymous term love. In other words, you can see that what the Bible showed as its system of reference is the same thing which Mrs. Eddy shows as the system of reference in the textbook, where she says, what is God? Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Just as the Bible has shown in biblical symbols what is the nature of God and has given these biblical symbols. So that there is a congruency. Can you say congruency? No, they are congruent, they are equal, huh? Between the biblical symbols and the synonymous terms. Now, the synonymous terms here are in the order as given in the question, what is God? And then answer, God is mind, spirit, soul. Principle, life, truth, and love. Meaning that here are two presentations of the very same thing, the one limited to biblical symbols, the other brought out in the new tongue of the divine system of reference. So that these really correspond. That's the word I was seeking, correspond with each other. Now, we must see these correspondences so that we have a clear concept of what's going on in our life. See, I try to show here again the level of Christian Science as the correlation between the subjective point of view and the objective point of view. What does it mean? You see, we said Christian Science is that level where is shown how the divine touches the human, how science is that which is now taking the human and correcting the misconceptions of the human. In other words, we can look at this whole picture always here from two different standpoints. We can look at those seven synonymous terms from the point of view of the synonymous terms, so as if we would sit on the throne of grace and look out as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, where we can say, I am, the I am, my being there is, the only being there is, the I am says, I am mind, I am spirit, you see, I am soul, I am principle, I am life, I am truth, I am love. If I take that, then I take the highest sense of the level of Christian Science. Because then I go out from the point of view of the synonymous terms. And that's what we are allowed to do. And the more we do that, the better. But then we must ask ourselves, how does such a consciousness react on the human level? So from the divinely subjective standpoint, we can see that the divine mind, which sees itself only as mind, is really showing itself as the intelligence, for instance, of mind. From the divine standpoint, mind says, I'm the great information, I'm the great knower, I'm the great supervisor, I oversee the whole thing, I'm the great intelligence that is. But from the humanly objective standpoint, from the human standpoint, so that it as it comes to me, to the human sense, it's very different. It changes its form. And that whole intelligence, which remains intelligence, when it comes to the human, appears perhaps as creative thought. You see? That the intelligence, which is always mind, mind being always intelligence, comes to the humanly objective approach, so as we experience it, as creative thought. And what does it do when it comes to us as creative thought? It annihilates its opposite. It annihilates ignorance. You see? So, can you see how the method is when we want to handle, so to say, error? Here in the last column you have all the forms of error, and the question is, how can we handle them? Shall we go out from the forms of error and try from the forms of error to arrive at some truth? Or what is our attitude? If we deal with it as science, then we always go out from the synonymous terms. We always go out from the synonymous terms and see, from the synonymous term, mind knows itself. Mind is the great intelligence. There is nothing unknown to that divine mind. And therefore, it comes to our human sense as creative thought. And as thought becomes more creative and more enlightened and more inspired, and so naturally, its opposite, ignorance, disappears. And so through the whole seven, you can see that how that happens. How if we have a better sense that I am spirit, that I am says I am spirit, and see spirit as all the ideas of spirit, like order, that really brings order into the human element, it purifies, it unfolds, and that is the truth about its opposite, about retrogression, futility, disillusionment, and so on. So that all those claims that we are retrograde, that all is for nothing, that all is futile, and so on, is just resolved into nothing the moment we go out from the synonymous term, spirit. And so it is with soul. Soul says, I am soul. Well, say to yourself, the I am that there is soul. The only I am there is soul. There is no other I, no other I am, but soul. And soul says, I'm unchangeable. I'm an unchangeable identity. Nothing can change me. Nothing can alter me. And that has its effect on the human, that it becomes very definite in our consciousness, what we have to do, what we have to say, what we have to study. Everything is named, is defined. This is called naming, defining, and therefore it resolves all its counterfeit sense, testimony sense, sense testimony, the incertitude within ourselves, the dissatisfaction within ourselves, all that is resolved. Can you see what a wealth lies therein if we study the seven synonymous terms? Because without the seven synonymous terms, this is just double Dutch or Chinese or whatever it is. You see, it's not understandable. But the moment we know the seven synonymous terms and their ideas characterizing the seven synonymous terms, we suddenly have a complete new vista and a very gracious way and method with which to handle the false states of consciousness. So principle says, I am principle. I am a principled being. I am a systematic being. I am system. And that comes to the human concept as harmony, as government. Because if we have a proper sense of principle and its system, then the system of our body operates properly. Then the system of our family operates properly. Then the system of our business operates properly. But first we must have a good sense of what principle is as system. As the constant interchange and interlocking of right ideas, all helping together in infinite relationship and so on and so on and so on, that system. That we must have in our fingertips. Or you have a sense of life where you say, I am life. The I am is life. You go out into the everyday of walk of life and have a feeling the only being there is the I am, which is life, which is individuality, indivisibility. That life cannot be split up, cannot end, cannot begin, and therefore gives to us a sense of exalted living. We live above the mortal sense of life, above the ups and downs of life. And this helps us really to overcome degeneration, death, lack, etc. Or truth comes to us as divine consciousness, comes, knows itself as the I am that is conscious of itself. And the more we see that truth itself is conscious of itself, the more it comes to us as a sense of dominion, as a sense of manhood, where we are no more just a slave, not just a cork on the water of in the storm, but that we have dominion over the situations. And that frees us from slavery, from sickness, which are counterfeits of manhood. And so it is with love. The I am says, I am. I am love. I am love. I am therefore a state of fulfillment, of complete fulfillment. Therefore, it comes to us as salvation, humanly. See, these are all human conditionings. Comes to us as salvation. Love itself isn't salvation. Love itself doesn't know itself as salvation. Love itself just knows itself as perfection, as fulfillment. But translated, as Christian Science must, to the human, we feel it as a saving activity. And that naturally frees us more and more from imperfection. Well, in this way, I wanted to introduce to you, see, how the picture changes the moment we come from one level to the other, and when we come to the level of Christian Science, one always has to look at it from two ways. From the throne of grace, from the throne of the synonymous terms, which only know themselves as synonymous terms and the ideas of them. And then we can look at it how, or look at it, what is the impact of it on the human situation. And that appears then again, because we translate it to a lower dimension, in new forms and in new phenomena, and we must understand them so that we don't misinterpret them. So if I want to have salvation, I'm not going to start with wanting to have salvation, with desiring salvation. This is all right for the religious people. This is all right for metaphysical people that want salvation. The scientist does not want salvation. If he feels that there is a need for salvation, he says, oh, golly, no. I go out from the being there is, love. And love is fulfilled. And the more I stay with that consciousness of fulfillment in being, the more it saves. It becomes flesh. The word becomes flesh. And when it becomes flesh, fulfillment shows itself as salvation and shows itself as a disappearing of imperfections.